No, go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, January 28th, 2025, 10 to a.m. We are all here for the annual meeting of the Annuity and Pension Board Employees Retirement System of the City of Milwaukee. Jan, can I please have a roll call?
Yes, Mr. Christensen?
Here.
Mr. DeClean?
Here.
Ms. Ford?
Here.
Mr. Helling?
Here.
Mr. Klusman?
Here.
Mr. Conrad?
Here.
Mr. Kovac? Still excused?
Here.
No. Oh, he's here. And Mr. Bell?
Here.
Quorum.
Thank you, Jan. Good morning, everyone. We are here for the annual meeting. Item number one, introduction of new board member Justin DeClean. Mr. DeClean won the election last fall, and this will be his first meeting with us. Mr. DeClean, go ahead with the introduction. Welcome.
Hello, thank you, everyone. I'm grateful to be here with you all and help to serve on this pension board. I am a police officer, been with the city for about 17 years, and yeah, I won the election, and I'm happy to serve along with you, and I'm anxious and willing to learn the ins and outs of everything, so bear with me. Thank you.
Thank you, Justin, and welcome to the team. Any comments or questions from board members or staff? Not hearing any, we'll move on to item number two, officers for the year 2025, A, the election of chair, and B, the election of vice chair. Going forward, I have to open the nominations up for the election of chair, and I have to do it three times. Are there any nominations for the election of chair?
Mr. Klusman will nominate Mr. Bell.
And for that.
Matt, did you want to call for the nominations again, as you mentioned, three times?
Yes. Is there another nomination for the election of chair? Not hearing any. One additional time. Is there any second nomination for the election of chair? Not hearing any other nominations. Tom had made the nomination for myself. Is there a second for the election of chair for 2025?
I'll second that nomination.
Thank you, Ms. Ford and Mr. Kovac. Much appreciated. And any objections? Not hearing any objections, it's a motion for the approval of Mr. Bell, myself, to serve as the chair for this board, and thank you for everyone and their support. Moving on to item two, officers for 2025, item B, the election of vice chair. Is there any nominations for the election of vice chair? And I would like to nominates Mr. Kovac for vice chair of the board for 2025. Any other nominations for the election of vice chair for the board 2025? Again, any nominations for the election of vice chair for the board 2025? Not here. For Mr. Kovac.
Mr. Bell, could you repeat that? You cut out for a second.
I'm sorry, it was a bit garbled there. So.
You, You're cutting in and out a little bit as well. Could you repeat the thing after the nominations? You have the three nominations.
Yes, there is a nomination. There's been three asks for the nomination for vice chair of the board. I made a nomination for Mr. Kovac for the vice chair. Is there a second regarding for Mr.
This is
Kovac?
Bill, I'll second.
Thank you, Bill. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any. Mr. Kovac, you have been nominated to vice chair of the board.
Thank you, everyone.
So, Mr. Bell.
Moving on to item number.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Allen, I just want to remind all the trustees that the new chair for this year will appoint the committee chairs and then I'll make that announcement for next month. So if anybody has any interest in the committees, you might want to talk to Mr. Bell about that.
Yes, thank you for that reminder, Jerry, and I'd be happy to talk with anyone regarding any interests or that anyone might have in any of the committees. So thank you, Jerry. Moving on to item three, the approval of minutes. Item A, regular meeting held December 17th, 2024. The minutes were in the packet. Any comments or questions regarding the minutes? Not hearing any comments or questions for the minutes, I would move to accept motion to approve the minutes for the regular meeting held December 17, 2024.
I'll motion's approval.
Thank you, Tim. Is there a second?
Justin, a second.
Thank you, Justin. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any. The approval of the December 17th meeting minutes passes. Moving on to item four, Chief Investment Officer report. I believe Eric is going to handle this. Good morning, Eric. Go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I'll provide the regular performance update, and then I have one announcement after that. So the fund ended the year with a value of $5.86 billion. And this is, I'll state, I know as I've been giving the weekly updates, I've been, you know, very careful to say that, you know, they weren't final. They didn't include all data. This reflects all of our data. This is Northern Trust numbers. So $5.86 billion, return of negative 1.7% in December, net of fees, underperformed by approximately 90 basis points. And that negative 1.7% in December, it brought our total fund return, and at the risk of getting a little bit into the weeds here, it brought our, as calculated by Northern Trust, to 6.849%. So that'll make the rounding a little weird. So when we display that as to two decimal places, that'll round to 6.85. When we display it to one decimal place like we have here, and as we typically do in the quarterly performance report, that'll round to 6.8. But that 6.85 number, for instance, that's what you'll see in the actuary report. So I just kind of wanted to make that clear to everyone because we are so close to, probably the closest we'll ever end up to our 6.8% assumed rate of return. So looking at relative performance for the month of December, it was kind of a continuation of a story that we saw all year. Public equity style bias was a detractor, and that was primarily from value and small cap. And then private equity was a detractor within manager selection. And again, similar, and we'll get into more detail, as I said, when we discuss this at the February Investment Committee meeting, but private equity was up 1.8% for the month of December. That's, you know, we're certainly not disappointed with it. It's the same story as all year. It just didn't keep up with the public market benchmark. And then, you know, with small in value, I think, again, a similar story that we ran into all year. But if you were watching the markets yesterday, I think that was a huge proof statement for why we have the portfolio set up the way we were, the way we do. So markets yesterday, you know, there was some news that really kind of gripped the markets yesterday about a Chinese AI chatbot that was, you know, purportedly developed for a significantly lower cost and with significantly less advanced GPU chips than, you know, the American AI chatbots. So that caused a real crash in the AI names, which meant the S&P 500 was down about 1.5%. The NASDAQ was down 3.1%. You know, our best estimate from Northern Trust to our fund was down 4 basis points. So we outperformed quite a bit on the equity side. Our fixed income allocation went up, you know, offsetting the losses in public equities. So, you know, I know it was painful to look at that small and value bias, you know, over the past year. But again, a day like yesterday shows why we have it set up the way we do. So sorry for the digression there, but just kind of wanted to give that example. So you can see in the chart at the right, the fund is underperforming in the 1 and 5 year periods while outperforming the longer time period shown. So for full year of 2024, our fixed income, absolute return, and real assets asset classes outperformed their respective benchmarks net of fees. 7 of our 15 active mandates outperformed net of fees, and we saw an investment change of $407.3 million, paid out benefits and expenses of $510.5 million, and received contributions of $252.5 million. Through January 27th, the fund was up 1.6% month to date in January, and again, that includes the bloodbath in stocks that we saw yesterday. Fund value was $6.17 billion, and 7 out of the 12 active mandates that we have data for are outperforming year-to-date. We haven't seen, you know, monthly estimates for our hedge funds or our AQR, emerging markets. That's some of the things that only report monthly. We've seen an investment change so far year-to-date of $99.3 million, received $212.2 million in contributions, paid out $2.0 million in expenses, and obviously due to the large contribution amount that we received, we will be paying benefits from the cash balance this month. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to take them at this time. Otherwise, as I said, I have one announcement to make.
Thank you, Eric, on that initial summary. Any comments or questions for Eric before he moves on? All right, thank you, Eric. Go ahead with your comment.
Sure, just as a reminder, we have a investment committee meeting on February 13th. So that means the packet will be going out next Friday. And on the plan for this meeting, Callan is gonna continue the de-risking discussion that we began in December. I know David's been working hard with Callan on some glide paths for that, so I think you know, we have some really good things to show you, so that should be a great discussion. We will, as I mentioned, we will do a deeper dive into 2024 performance with our typical quarterly performance presentation and the value add analysis that we typically provide at the beginning of each year, and then we also have a number of due diligence reports that we're working on, and we'll be presenting those. So once again, that is February 13th for the investment committee meeting. That concludes my comments.
Thank you, Eric. Any comments or questions before we move on?
Mr. Chair, I just want to make a comment on something that Eric said. Yesterday was the proof of the pudding that diversification is the only free lunch in investing. And hopefully we will continue to experience the benefits of it. And it really was a bloodbath yesterday. And, you know, markets are efficient. They operate on news. Some substantial news came out yesterday, and the markets adjusted immediately.
Thank you, Jerry. Any other comments or questions? All right, not hearing any, we'll move on to item 5, legislative committee report. This was put on there in case we wanted to discuss what was discussed in the earlier meeting. Deborah, do you have any reason to mention anything regarding the committee report? Or I know we were all on the line for that, or most were. Not hearing anything regarding that, I will move on from the legislative committee report. I'm sorry, Matt, I was muted.
I'm just talking away and nothing's going on.
Go ahead, Deborah.
Sorry about that. My question to Jerry was, since it was the committee of the whole, do I need to bring forth the motion that we passed?
No, it was also a full board meeting. It was posted for that.
Yeah.
So okay. You're okay, Deborah, there?
Okay.
I just want to mention, if I may, that the next Civil Service Commission meeting is going to be on February 11th. There's also one on the 25th, and there's F&P meetings on the 5th and the 26th. So since the board has made a decision about exempting the position, the staff will bring that to, will attempt anyway, to get that before the Civil Service Commission in February. Unless some roadblocks get thrown our way, I'm not expecting any, but you never know. We have to go to DER, is really staffs the CSC, the Civil Service Commission. So we'll try to bring that to them next month and come back to the board with any results of your decisions and of their acceptance of them, hopefully. Thank you, Deborah.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Deborah. Anything else regarding?
No.
Thank you. That completes item 5. Moving on to item 6, new business. Letter A, authorization to sign vouchers. This was in our packet regarding the resolution. Jerry, any comments or questions?
No, this is a standard housekeeping business item for the first of every year. There's a list in your packet, as Matt mentioned. It shows all the authorized signatories for our fund in order to sign vouchers, which pay bills, obviously. So you can see all the positions that are included in the amongst the Board of Trustees, the chairman, the vice chair. There are city officers as well, the city comptroller, the special deputy to the city comptroller, deputy comptroller, accounts director, and the I believe the treasurer's in there too, right? No. Jan, is that correct?
This is correct. This is.
Okay. Very good. So we will have all, with approval by the board of this authorization, we will have all these incumbents on these positions sign this so that Northern Trust can have it on file to authorize any signatures that are sent to them for payment of invoices. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. So any comments or questions from board members?
So a motion would be in order to approve Great. This template.
I will make the motion to approve the authorization to sign vouchers as documented. Do I have a second?
4 seconds.
Thank you, Ms. Ford. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, the motion to approve the authorization to sign vouchers as documented passes. Moving on to item six, letter B, retirement death claims and refunds for December 2024. Go ahead, Jerry.
Okay, so in your packet is the routine monthly list for the payroll. If anybody has questions or comments about the names on the list, now would be a good time to ask them, or you can contact me offline if you have other questions that come up later. Otherwise, a motion would be ordered to approve the payroll for the month of December.
Thank you. Any comments or questions from board members or staff? I will make the motion to approve the payroll for December 2024. Do I have a second?
Justin will second.
Thank you, Justin. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections, motion to approve the payroll for December 2024 passes. Moving on to item six, letter C, conference requests for January 2025. Jerry, go ahead.
Jan, I don't have one in my packet.
I wonder if it was just in the electronic packet. There might have just been one for
Keith Dickerson. Right. Mr. Dickerson would like to attend the Harrison Street Annual Conference in Nashville, Tennessee, and his estimated budget is $1,000.
Thank you, Jerry. Any comments or questions from board members or staff? Not hearing any, I will entertain a motion for the approval of conference requests, the one conference for Nashville, Tennessee, or who's it for, Jerry?
Keith Dickerson. Keith is a member of the investment staff. I'm not sure that everybody's met him since he was new in the last year or so.
So that would be the motion to approve the conference request for Keith Dickerson to attend in Nashville.
Ellie, I'll make that motion.
Do I have a motion? Thank you, Tim. Do I have a second?
This is Bill. I'll second.
Thank you, Bill. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections, the motion to approve the conference request for Keith Dickerson passes. Moving on to item six, letter D, the approval of the 2024 security lendings budget.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is another annual housekeeping item for conducting business here. Daniel, are you on the line per chance?
No, it's not.
Well, I knew he was at a conference. He said he would try to attend. But anyway, there is a requirement in the charter that every year the board has to authorize to sweep the securities lending revenue, which this year was approximately $919,000 received in securities lending revenue. That has to be swept into the combined fund. If it's not swept, then it remains in one of the older funds. I believe it's the retirement fund. Again, this is a charter requirement. It's a routine business item. And you can see the detail on the first page, and then the summary. The second page includes the total projected cost for administrative expenses that this money would be applied to. And so we're asking for a resolution to authorize moving this money from securities lending operations into the combined fund. And I did explain last night a little bit to Officer DeClean, about what this was all about. We have securities lending. Maybe Eric, for Mr. DeClean's benefit and the benefit of refresher for all the trustees, would you explain a little bit about securities lending again for everybody's benefit?
Sure, Jerry, I'm happy to do that. Securities lending, I mean, it's very much what it sounds like. So there are people out there that want to borrow our securities. It can be for many reasons, although the most typical reason is if they want to establish a short position. So they're borrowing our security, selling it with the obligation that that they will buy it back later, and their goal is to be able to buy it back at a lower price and make a profit in that way. Northern Trust administers for us. I mean, there's lots of protections that they provide around making sure that we always get our securities back when we need them. But as part of that,
There's collateral too, right, Derek?
There's collateral, yeah, exactly. We earn a fee for that. So the you know, the entity that's borrowing the security from us pays a fee. And then Northern Trust invests that collateral and is hopefully able to earn a spread on that collateral. So that's kind of the two ways that we make money on lending securities, is the fee that the borrower pays us, and then the you know, the spread that Northern Trust is able to earn by investing the collateral.
Well, thank you, Eric. You know, I would also add to that for everybody's benefit, just to refresh, securities lending is actually one of our larger managers. The volume of transactions can be substantial. We, you know, the earnings were $919,000, but the value of the shares that are, you know, potentially put at risk, there is risk here, right? We experienced some of that in the global financial crisis, where Northern Trust gated the securities lending operation, and we all had to stand in line to get, you know, to get out of it. So, Eric, do you happen to have handy just how much value of our security positions were that we lent over the year, just to let people know
I mean, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me. I mean, it's in the hundreds of million. You know, at any given time, there might be $300 to $400 million in stocks that we're lending, and I mean, another few hundred million in bonds, believe it or not. You know, people want to borrow bonds as well. And Jerry, I will just add, and thanks for reminding me, we instruct Northern, we've tried to construct this program to be as conservative as possible. So, you know, we've instructed Northern Trust to be in, you know, if not the least risky collateral, I mean, definitely one of their least risky collateral, you know, investment options for the collateral. We only accept cash as collateral. We don't, you know, some bar, you know, sometimes they'll come to us and say, oh, you know, if you would take stocks as collateral, we think we could lend, you know, have more as your securities out on loan. We've said that's not worth the risk. We want to have cash collateral.
Yeah.
So we really, I think, you know, this is, I think, you know, kind of a, we want to be very, very cognizant of those risks, and you know, this is some kind of bonus earnings that we can get, but it's not something where we want to take a lot of risk to try to, right, to get, you know, an extra $50,000 or something. That's not worth it.
I believe the collateral requirements are 102% of the amount at loan that has to be maintained, and that Northern guarantees the return of the securities, right, Eric?
Correct.
Okay, so that's all part of the risk mitigation there. But anyway, it's just a short explanation because we're asking you to vote on this, and we thought it would be important to let you know what's involved. Thank you. So a motion would be in order, Matt, to approve the transfer of the earnings to the combined fund.
Thank you, Jerry and Eric. So any comments or questions? Right, not hearing any. We'll entertain a motion to approve the 2024 security lending budget and the transfer of funds regarding to the combined fund.
Justin will make that motion.
Thank you, Justin. Do I have a second?
Klossman. Ford, second.
Thank you, Ms. Ford. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections, the motion passes. Item 6
Letter E, annual obligation of trustees and ERS officers to submit annual statement of economic interest. Included in the packet was our statement of economic interest form. I know it can also be done online now. Just as a reminder, this is due February 28th of 2025. And the directions and instructions are outlined on the first sheet in the packet. Again, I know many have submitted this online before, which is a bit easier to complete. So any comments, Jerry, regarding?
Yes, just one short tip. I did mine a week or so ago, and I used the DocuSign functionality that they provided for us last year. So I didn't have a copy in the file for my last year's filing because it was done by DocuSign, right? And so if you need to refer to your last year's when you do it, if you just call the Ethics Commission up, they'll be happy to furnish you one immediately, which is what they did for me. So good luck, and they're serious about it.
Thank you, Jerry. Just a reminder, there is a fee or penalty that is documented in the instructions as well. Just make sure everyone gets that turned in to avoid any issues regarding. Thank you, Jerry. Moving on to item 6, letter F, we have an approval item for the resolution for annuity and pension board member Molly King. I will go and read the resolution. Whereas Ms. Molly King, trustee of the annual annuity and pension board, conscientiously served in the above capacity from January 2021 through December 2024 and represented the system during her tenure of office. And whereas Ms. King's knowledge of pension benefits in her prior 6 years of service in the City of Milwaukee Budget and Management Division provided strategic advice to the City Employee Retirement System on matters concerning the system, enabled her to make valuable contributions to the Annuity and Pension Board and the well-being of the employees' retirement system of the City of Milwaukee and its tens of thousands of members and beneficiaries. And whereas Ms. King served diligently on the Investment Committee of the Annuity and Pension Board throughout her tenure, assisting in the prudent development and implementations of the employee retirement system's highly successful investment policy, which has generated several billions of dollars of returns for the exclusive benefit of the system's members and beneficiaries. And whereas Ms. King served diligently as a member of the Administration and Operations Committee of the Annuity and Pension Board from March 2021 through December 2024, and as vice chair of the committee throughout her tenure, during which time she oversaw the continued successful operations of the ERS, especially during the global emergency of the COVID-19 pandemic. And whereas Ms. King's departure will be a great loss to the Annuity and Pension Board and the members of the Employee Retirement System, therefore be it resolved by the Annuity and Pension Board that it hereby expresses its sincere appreciation, valuable and conscientious service of Ms. King, and be it further resolved that the resolution be recorded in the permanent records of this board and that a suitable engrossed copy be forwarded to Ms. King. Adopted January 28th, 2025, the Annuity and Pension Board, with signatures to come. On a personal, I'd just like to thank Ms. King. Not sure if she's on the line, but she was always an advocate for and fiduciary member of the board, and it was a pleasure working with her. Thank you, Ms. King. Any comments or questions from board members or staff before the motion?
Is this, I would forward second your comments. I enjoyed very much working with Ms. King while she was on board.
Thank you, Ms. Ford. Any other comments? Is Ms. King on the line?
No, she's not.
No, she's not. I have just one little detail. Once this is signed, we have, Jan has obtained a nice plaque to put a, it says engrossed copy, which it is, it's on parchment, and these will be everybody's original signatures, and we'll present it to Ms. King, to Molly, at the first opportunity. So Tom is gonna sign
his. Thank you, Jerry.
Okay, thank you.
And I will make the motion for the approval of resolution for newly and pension board member Molly King. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Bill. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objection, the motion for approval of resolution for newly and pension board member Molly King passes. Moving on to item 7, medical reports, letter A, all duty and ordinary disability applications and reexaminations for January 2025. Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, Gus, you want to go through the list today?
Sure, it's rather routine. This is Gus Petropoulos, Deputy Director, and the first report is the medical panel approvals report. These were routine of note. There's one that it says on the comments, it's firefighter Burkett, that he's exempt from re-exam. That's usually a question that comes with that. That just means he's converting and is no longer required to go through re-exams. The next report is medical council approvals report. There's one re-exam on that, which is approval. And that's before you for approval, both of these reports. If there's any questions or comments, I'll take them at this time. I would note that at the medical council meeting next week, Friday, Assistant City Attorney Patrick McLean will be doing a presentation to our new alternate doctor and the council as a whole as a refresher. And if any board members are interested in attending and listening to that presentation, might be helpful understanding the program.
So, Gus, the presentation is going to pretty much outline the statutory requirements, right?
Yeah, the requirements and responsibilities and duties of the medical council, but it also gives a window into the process and might be helpful to any board members that are interested in attending.
Thank you.
Terry will send a link if you want to dial in, or you can attend in person if you so wish. That's all I have.
Thank you, Gus. Any comments or questions regarding the medical reports for January 2025? Right, not hearing any, I entertain a motion to approve the medical reports for January
2025.
Justin will make that motion.
Justin will second.
I heard Justin make the motion. Thank you, and Tom seconded it. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objection, motion to approve medical reports January 2025 passes. Moving on to item 8, unfinished business, letter A, pending legal opinion and service request report. Jerry or Patrick, anything regarding?
Patrick, you want to go ahead and talk about this, or I will, whichever you prefer.
Sure, yeah, I don't, thanks Jerry, and thanks Mr. Chair. I don't have any specific updates, anything substantive for that first item, part one. There is some related information in the executive director's report, so I don't want to steal Jerry's thunder, but we haven't developed a product yet, but it is remaining on our radar, and we're working diligently to get that complete. So. Having said that, I'm happy to answer any questions anyone might have. Or Jerry, if you want to add additional detail, I invite you to do so.
Well, I'll just wait for my report, that's all.
Thank you, Patrick. Any comments or questions for letter A, pending legal opinions? Not hearing any, thank you. Item 8. Letter B, pending legislation reports.
Well,
go ahead, Jerry.
This is really like the legislative committee report. We had two items on the legislative committee, and one had to do with succession planning for key executive ERS management, which we discussed thoroughly today, and then the limited duty protocols, which has been carried over for further discussion at the next meeting. And anybody has any questions, I guess we could then.
Thank you, Jerry.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thank you, Jerry. Any comments or questions from board members or staff? All right, not hearing any. Moving on to item 8, letter C, executive director's report, inventory of ERS projects.
Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, thank you. Item number one, personnel update. I'm happy to say no vacancies currently amongst our personnel on the staff. On member services, we had 36 new retirees on the December payroll this month. We're expecting 32 for the month of January. And we had a record, unfortunately, 22 of our members passing in the month of November. Mike has set retirement workshop dates for 2025. There'll be 4 workshops for the general city, 2 for the MPD, and 2 workshops for the fire department. And then we have a breakout of the year-to-date, you know, benefit payouts and head counts for each of these categories, routine. On financial services, the 1099 R forms, so these are the tax forms, as everybody knows, that get furnished to the IRS and to our members. At the end of this month, they're being processed, I guess, as we speak, right, Terry? And then employee actuarial contributions for 2025 were received from the city. And MPS made a partial payment. It's customary for them because they get a state subsidy. They're on a fiscal year basis, a July to June year. They will make the remainder of their contribution before it's due. Also, for the other agencies, which totaled $215 million, approximately. And the city also sent directly to the trust the $6.3 million on behalf of the other agencies for 2025 that came as a result of the sales tax receipts under Act 12. So we thank very much the budget office for facilitating that. And that money is in the trust. As you may recall, the city agencies get some of the sales tax money that's attributable to the growth in the normal cost from the 2022 year base year under the Act 12 statute. And because the legislature lowered the discount rate, principally that's the reason why the normal cost increased. And so the city furnished us that money. We don't expect this to continue to grow. Larry, are you on the line yet? Larry Langer from CADMAC said he would be on the line. He's at another trustee meeting for another client, but he owes us and the budget office, the city, an exhibit to show the expected increase in employer contributions over the next 5 years, including any amounts that would be available to both the city and agencies under Act 12 from the sales tax receipts. But I've been told that we do not expect to have normal cost increase unless there is some kind of a change in the discount rate. As you may recall, our discount rate is now pegged to the discount rate for the active members of the Wisconsin retirement system. But barring any reduction, and there was not a reduction when they reset their or reaffirmed their rate for this coming year. So barring any reduction in the discount rate, we don't expect to see much normal cost increase for either the city or the agencies. The normal cost, as you may recall, is really simply the cost of earning another year's worth of benefits by all the members, active members. The thing that can grow and change a lot is the unfunded liability. That kind of, you know, moves around, goes up and down. It depends greatly on the experience of the plan, you know, based on all the assumptions we make, based on the market returns, based on retirements and deaths and turnover, the demographic assumptions and inflation, the economic assumptions. So unfunded liability can rise or fall. That we expect to change. The city can and will and does contribute money from Act 12 receipts for the unfunded liability. And they did so already for 2025, and we're very happy that that's occurred. Lastly, on this item, we completed the WRS annual reconciliation for 2024 for the city. As you may recall, the ERS is we are the city's agent for the city's participation in the Wisconsin retirement system. The city payroll passes the wage and service data to us, and through our merits system, we act as an interface between the city and the Wisconsin retirement system. Once a year, we're required to reconcile all the reporting that we do. The actual contributions from the employers in the WRS have to come monthly. But at the end of the year, we have to, you know, total them all up, and if there's any overage or underage, then it gets resolved at that point. So that's now been completed with satisfactorily, I understand. We haven't had any comeback, pushback or anything from the WRS, have we?
Nothing. No. We have nothing.
We're not anticipating any either. Information systems, information services, everything is going well. Everything is clean. I did receive an inquiry just yesterday from someone trying to market services for us to restructure our entire operation based on AI, which I think was a very interesting coincidence given what given the news that occurred in the securities markets yesterday. Actually, our staff has been looking at AI for a long time, and along with our consultants, and our number one concern is for data security, so I don't think we're going to recommend jumping on AI at any time. We already restrict access to our system to the outside world. We're not eager. I mean, Jeff can tell you, if anybody has questions, I believe he's on the line. There's a continuing and constant threat environment, and so adopting AI applications would involve using the cloud, which means the rest of the world. And of course, there are people trying to hack into our system, as I mentioned, continuously. So anyway, everything is going fine for now, knock on wood, in IT. Then the major item I had in this report has got to do with administration. This has to do with the Housing Authority. As I mentioned in an email previously, the Housing Authority has remitted the last of its remaining outstanding contribution was $3,000 it was delinquent for the 2023 plan year. And so now it's satisfied that obligation. And then earlier this month, we met with the Hackham officials with their departing executive director and their departing chief financial officer and their finance director regarding how are they going to satisfy their future obligations beyond 2023. And I believe we resolved this matter. They've committed to making regular quarterly installment payments for 24, 25, and 26 as well. And after that, they intend to return to making single payments, I guess. And they're doing all this in order to satisfy the charter requirements for timely payment with interest that accrues from the date of the valuation effective. The valuations are always effective on January 1st or as of January 1st. Many of the employers, certainly the city, pays right away to avoid interest charges. Some of the employers don't pay all of the contribution or even any of it immediately. And so from the first of the year until they actually satisfy the obligation, they have to pay interest on the amount that they owe based on our discount rate, which is 6.8%. So Hackham has committed to us to make their payments quarterly to stay up to date. They have a new finance director, and I guess they're looking for a new CFO because the existing CFO is going to retire in mid-February, according to news reports. We've also, as we talked about a little bit before under the legal opinions, I've asked the city attorney for an opinion on whether the city, and this was at the request of one of the trustees actually, it came up in the last meeting, whether the city has the sufficient jurisdiction authority over the city agencies to adopt a provision in the charter that's similar to the collection provisions that are applied to the city proper. And you know, one of my questions in that also is exactly what are the applicable provisions that apply to the city beyond the charter. We're pretty familiar with the charter, but there's other ordinances in the code of ordinances, and we want to make sure that we understand exactly what it is that the city is required to do. Although there's never been any occurrence of any delinquency by the city of Milwaukee, we just want to make sure that we have a good handle on that, and that and whether or not the city agencies can be brought into the same kind of potential collection regime that is attributable to the city. I mentioned the $6.3 million that came from Acts 12 on behalf of the agencies already. I won't go into that anymore. And then the good news is, and Mr. Christensen, you're on the line, and if you have any comments or corrections of my statements, please do so. Based on the latest figures that we obtained from the State Department of Revenue website, the 2024 year-to-date sales receipts, which I believe are through November, these are amounts that were dispersed to the city net of the state's administrative fee were approximately $169.2 million. And the final tally is yet to come, that's because there's a reporting lag, and I think there was a startup, last year was the first startup of this sales tax. And so I think, as Comptroller mentioned to me in a chance meeting we had, that there's maybe 1.5 more months of collections approximately. So we're not really sure what the final tally is going to be, but it appears that, the amount in the pension bucket, what I call the pension bucket for sales tax, which is 90% of the net receipts can be applied to pension contributions. 10% have to go for support of new public safety employees. It appears that, according to the actuary's report, $142 million was determined by the valuation of, for 2025, for the 25 contribution on Table 20, as the amount that's eligible under Act 12 for, Act 12 provisions to service the unfunded liability. And so we have approximately of $169 million that's been collected, approximately $152 million that would be available in the pension bucket to satisfy this $141 million. So there's more than enough money in there for the 25 contribution. And that contribution has actually been paid already. So it's already in the bag, so to speak, and everything seems to be going swimmingly. And then, of course, there's still more sales tax to be collected for 2024, as yet undetermined. And I know there's an interest on the Board of Trustees as to how much that would be. But the news seems to be pretty good that it was more than sufficient for, to fund the 2025 contribution. So I guess we can stay tuned and find out what the total collection was for the year when that becomes final. So if there are any questions or comments on Hackam or the sales tax receipts, I'd be happy to address them. And of course, Mr. Christensen's on the line, and he's the expert on this subject as well.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I may just speak on this. So we did get an update from the State Department of Revenue that, so we received the January distribution, which is all attributable to sales that took place in 2024. So as of the January distribution, we had $187.7 million collected. So we've already surpassed the benchmark of $184 million, which was our original estimate for the 2024 budget. And we will apply the portion of the February distribution that's attributable to sales that took place in 2024. We're estimating that to be somewhere in the neighborhood of somewhere between $9 and $11 million or so. So we could see something approaching the $200 million figure or slightly under for a total fiscal year 2024 revenue from the sales tax.
Yeah, and again, that was more than enough to pay the 2025 pension contribution. For that, we're very grateful. Thank you, Mr. Christensen.
Mr. Chair.
I had a question, might be an Act 12 question, could be a budget question as well. So just going by the numbers here, I know that they're higher, but so we have a extra $11 million. Where does that extra $11 million go? I know Act 12 says up to 90%. Does that mean if it's less than 90%, they pay off the pension and the rest goes into the city coffers? Or I know at our December meeting, we talked about possibly a reserve fund, for a bad year where our employee contribution is going to be higher than what the tax brings in.
Well, the last time this question came up, Patrick was not in attendance, but he's here now, right, Patrick?
I am here, yes.
So what do you think Act 12 says?
Yeah, so Act 12 essentially provides a cascading series of options for what to do with the tax revenue. And the way it works for pension purposes, it says, just like you just indicated, up to 90%. However, if the amount of the allowable payments for pension purposes exceeds does not exceed the amount collected, That additional money then goes down to the next tier of expenditures, which is essentially police and fire expenses. So we have had some discussions about whether, and we don't have an opinion on this, so this is just preliminary. There does not appear to be a mechanism in Act 12 whereby the city could make contributions to the reserve fund, because that's not one of the allowable expenditures for pension purposes. So, you know, like I said, only the city attorney can make, you know, formal legal pronouncements, and we obviously don't have an opinion on that. But just looking at the text of Act 12, you know, it does direct that if the required pension payments are lower than 90% of the amount of tax collected, then that money is reallocated to other purposes, and one of them is not the reserve fund.
Patrick, the other purposes are limited significantly, right, to supporting public safety, new hire, or
right, right. There's an intent, overall intent in Act 12, that money be used to increase the daily staffing levels of those departments. And then once certain statutory thresholds are reached, there's a little bit more latitude about where that money can go. But again, it's largely related to police and fire.
Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick.
Okay, so then just to finish the report, we talked about the statement of economic interest, and there are also the next item. We have a list of the goals and objectives we set out to achieve for 2024 and the results, and that's attached to this report along with goals for this year, for 2025. And also we have summaries of the member service data for the year, you know, how many folks took withdrawals, retirements, and we have a customer satisfaction survey as well. So if you would like to take the time to peruse the goals and the member service data, if you have any questions or comments, you could bring them either now or later in the subsequent meeting. So, and that's my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Any comments or questions for Jerry before moving on? I know we've been going for 2 hours. I anticipate a bit more. What do you think, Jerry, about another 45 minutes, hour?
I wouldn't think it would be any longer than that. So one more action item that we need to resolve, and that after that you can pretty much go very quickly.
Got it. Does anyone need a break, or should we continue through? Not hearing anyone regarding a break, we will continue on. Item 8, oh, thank you, Jerry, for your report. Yeah. Moving on, item 8, letter D, the approval of Legislative Audit Bureau invoice.
Yes, actually...
Are you handling that?
I guess so, unless Daniel's on the line. He's not, okay. He was going to try to break away from his conference, but it didn't work, I guess. Actually, I misspoke. There's two items that we have to ask for action on. This is the first one is the invoice that we received from the Legislative Audit Bureau for the audit for 2024. Mr. Gopalan had requested that the Bureau submit a breakout of the itemized of the bill. As you know, under Act 12, the Audit Bureau is authorized and directed, mandated, in fact, by the statute to conduct an audit of the ERS that includes a financial audit, examination of our internal controls, and also to report any illegal or unauthorized transactions in the report. And they have a fee cap in the statute of $145,000 currently for the audit of the system. And so what the LAB has submitted a follow-up letter that's in your packet. The first letter just specified $145,000. Daniel had discussions with the audit manager and the staff, and they explained to him that the number of hours that they expended on this audit in the first year, you know, the initial audit, exceeded the maximum fee. So they had to cap the fee at $145,000. And this letter that we got also explained that they contracted with a actuarial firm, the Milliman firm, for about $30,000, especially since it was the first work through for them. They wanted to get a good understanding of the actuarial valuation process. And I can tell you that indeed they did, because we know that they requested 20 years of actuarial valuations to look at, not just 2023, but it went back 20 years. And I guess the firm that they hired also spent some time auditing 2024's valuation, I think, before they turned their attention back to 2023. So it's not surprising that there were a number of hours expended in all this activity. To cut to the chase here, if you subtract the $30,000 from $145,000, and the reason I suggest subtract it is that the prior firms that we retained never engaged their own actuary, never engaged an outside actuary. So setting aside the $30,000, that brings their audit fee down to $115,000, which exceeds a little bit the amount that we had obtained through competitive bidding from the private sector firms, but still quite reasonable. And actually, I'm not suggesting that you wouldn't pay the $30,000. It's actually part of the audit. It's the report is part of their work papers, as I understand it. And so it seems to me that the fee is reasonable. And the reason I stress the word reasonable is because we have a legal opinion from our outside tax counsel that says that although the Act 12 mandates an audit, that the fees still have to be reasonable in order for a qualified plan to pay them under the Internal Revenue Code. And as you know, we're regulated by the Internal Revenue Code to some extent. Even though we're not an ERISA plan, we have to meet the requirements of Section 401A. And, you know, paying amounts that are reasonable is one of the conditions in the IRS regs. And so how do we determine what's reasonable? Normally we look to the outside market, we look for fair market value for the value of services. And what I'm suggesting here is, given the fact that the LAB had to perform an in-depth review of both our actuarial valuation process and also has a more expansive requirement to look at internal controls than the private sector auditors do, that this amount is reasonable. They told us that they couldn't break it out any further. I think Mr. Gopalan, if he were here, would explain that he was interested in understanding how much was attributable to the report for the requirements under GASB 68, which is, GASB 68 is really a report that shows the allocation of liabilities, particularly to the various employers. It's an employer report that the employers use for their financial statements. He wanted to understand how much was for GASB 68 as compared to GASB 67. GASB 67 is the accounting standard for the public sector accounts that are reports that is essentially our financial report, okay? But they explained to us that, to Daniel, that they were unable to do that because there's so much of the work for GASB 68 that's embedded in the 67 analysis that they really couldn't separate it. Anyway, long-winded explanation, that's what I was told anyway by Mr. Gopalan. And so we're recommending that you pay this fee in full because we believe it meets the standard of the code of being reasonable. Any further questions or comments on that? Long-winded detailed explanation, sorry.
Thank you, Jerry. Any comments or questions for Jerry regarding that approval item?
Yeah, this is Rudy. I don't know why they're being so cagey about this, but still we can assume the state isn't trying to pull anything.
No, I don't think so.
And I'm half tempted to do an open records request to see what their actual costs are, but there's no point biting the hand that feeds you, right?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that, Rudy.
No point getting into a further into any more disputes with the state.
No, I don't think so. You know, in the private sector, the auditors, they have to, just like private law firms, they track their hours in 15-minute increments. I don't know if they do that at this, in the State Audit Bureau. Maybe they do for internal reasons, I don't know, but in any case, they weren't able to give us any further breakdown on what was obtained. Thank you.
Well, maybe the Audit Bureau should audit itself if its records are that loose.
Thank you.
Okay. I follow your recommendation, Rudy.
Thank you, Rudy. Any other comments? Not hearing any, I will entertain a motion to approve the Legislative Audit Bureau invoice and payment as discussed.
Klossman will motion.
This is Bill, I'll second.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom, for the motion. Thank you, Bill, for the second. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections, the approval of Legislative Audit Bureau invoice and payment as discussed passes.
Okay.
Moving on to item.
As a postscript, we're looking forward to kicking off the audit for 2024. We expect to hear from them. Dan, I think Dan has made some contact, and we haven't heard back, but I'm sure it'll be soon. And that's a good segue to the next item. Go ahead, Matt.
Thank you, Jerry. Item 8, letter E, approval of the 2025 A&O Committee Audit Charter.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, the reason it's a segue is that this is a draft A&O Operations Committee Charter, Audit Charter. It was last updated in June of 2024. The LAB has requested that we further update it to, I think, more formally, I don't want to say nail down, but more formally express in here the requirements of Act 12. And so we did so. We can see in the highlighted sections here that it's the intent of this draft that the audit for 2024 and beyond comply with all the provisions of Act 12, which we've identified here. And we also struck some of the provisions from the prior update that basically provided the A&O committee with a mandate from the board to select the external auditors, because the external auditors have been selected already by Act 12, by statute. We have to use the LAB, okay, for financial audit anyway. There are external auditors which are for sort of in a confusion of language, external auditors for internal audit, okay, for actually operational audit. Sorry about that. But for financial audit purposes, the LAB is in fact the mandated financial auditor by Act 12, as I mentioned. So we struck all the provisions. You can see they're crossed out. They have to do with the committee, you know, selecting the outside auditors. And then if you flip over to page 3, there's more language that's been excised that has to do with the proposed scope of the audit and the coordination efforts with the audit committee, because the LAB has told us that essentially our A&O is not functioning in that capacity any longer under Act 12. So we struck that. We did want to emphasize, though, and so I included language. I had Patrick check the citations for us. There's more to the state pension law than just Act 12, okay? There's a 1937 Act which establishes the ERS. There was updated in 1947 by 1947 session laws. And further, there was a Supreme Court case decision in July of 2028, Milwaukee Police Association versus the City of Milwaukee, in which the court held that the members and beneficiaries of our fund have property rights in the right to vote for the trustees that administer their fund, right? So again, there's more to our state pension law than simply Act 12. This system is over 80 years old under state law. And I would say also further that, you know, the law of trust also applies to the fiduciary standards that this board is subject to, right? and that's a state law as well. And that, the law of trust is a longstanding provision under state law. Even before there was a state of Wisconsin, there was an English common law about the law of trust. The fiduciary standard in law of trust is an ancient doctrine. Rudy, correct me when I say this wrong, or Patrick, but I believe that the concept of fiduciary duty goes back to the Roman Empire, okay? As fiduciaries, we're put in the position of watching out for other people's interests in this plan. And so all of this combines to, and this is what we wanted to make sure was clarified in the document, all of this that means, this means that the board is the administrator of this fund. It has a fiduciary duty to do so in a prudent manner. It has been held by the courts many, many times. And also, as the fiduciary and administrator, one of its duties is to issue financial statements, okay, to report to the members and beneficiaries of the fund, right? And so the board is the issuer of these financial statements, not the staff. The executive director is not the issuer of the financial statements. And I am the secretary of the board, and as we decided this morning, any future ED will also be the secretary of the board. But at the end of the day, since the board is the issuer of the financials, they have to be apprised of any issues concerning these financial statements. Otherwise, they can't make an informed decision. We discussed that briefly earlier this year, back in the fall, when we were trying to, I think it was initially in September, when we were trying to get approval for financials, right? So if there are requests from the auditors to amend the financials, which there were in 2024, the board needs to be bought into that, right? Now, there are state confidentiality statutes about the audit, which we know apply to the Legislative Audit Bureau. Whether they apply to the discussion internally between the staff and the Board of Trustees and the staff and its legal counsel is somewhat unclear. I've asked Patrick to explore the state statute on confidentiality, so there's no no ambiguity about, well, there's probably ambiguity, but so that we understand what it means. We were admonished a couple times last year in writing that was, I believe, furnished to the trustees as about this confidentiality that, you know, we couldn't discuss these issues with the trustees. So, Patrick, do you have any comments about that? I know it's a work in progress, I think, right?
Yeah, thanks, Jerry. I mean, the simple fact is we're going to have conversations with the LAB about what that statute says. I think it's safe to say at this point that they're reading it much more restrictively than we think is a reasonable interpretation of it. And that certainly there must be some communication, as for all the reasons Jerry just indicated, between staff and the board about the actuarial process and the financial statements. So
the progress of the audit too, by the way. I mean, that's really what is at issue, the status of the audit, you know.
Yeah, so
especially
if there are
requested changes.
Yes, so we are going to be opening a dialogue with the LAB about that, and hopefully we're going to achieve some sort of agreement about it. I'm optimistic about that. And if we can't, then, you know, we can cross that bridge when we get to
it. Yeah, and I guess the major point here is we have over $8 billion of liabilities that are owed to our members and beneficiaries. It's a very substantial obligation that this board has to fulfill long run. And so reporting to those members and beneficiaries is an important element of the law of trust, which is a state law, and as I mentioned, an ancient doctrine. And it's a fiduciary duty and an obligation of the board that each of the trustees has jointly and severally. No, it's not several. Yeah, it is. It's joint and several. Everybody that's a member of this board has that duty. So we incorporated some language in here to make it clear that the board is the administrator and has responsibility for these statements. And that's what this is about, and so we're asking that you consider approving this for, one other important item. We're asking the board for authority to allow us meaning the staff, to sign the engagement letter for the audit for 2024. That letter, we think, an advice of counsel amounts to an agreement. The staff doesn't have any authority to enter into agreements on its own, and so we're asking for the board for continuing authority you know, expedite the audit process, and the auditors wanted us to expedite this process too. So we're asking for authority to enter into the engagement letter and make the representations in that letter that are required. And also later, there's a management representation letter before the end of the audit. So we're asking for a grant of authority, since the A&O isn't really, you know, functioning as the audit committee any longer, selecting the auditors, etc. So again, a motion would be in order, or at least discussion and comments on the draft. If you don't want to approve at this meeting, that's fine. We can carry it over again. It's getting late, and the meeting's dragged on for a long time, but we just wanted to bring it to your attention so that we can, you know, get prepared to conduct the 2024 audit. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry and Patrick. Any comments or questions?
Tom has one.
Regarding the... Go ahead, Tom.
I like this second green box here where it says the A&O committee shall review the reasonableness and blah, blah, blah. Terry, can you scroll back to the earlier part? I guess it's maybe for Jerry and Patrick. Would this hem us up, this first gold box where it says, you know, sometimes we get hung up on that, we have to approve it. This wording here kind of says that the actuarial audits, that we will review and approve the fees. That yeah. Seems kind of hard and like, but the other green box on the other page kind of says for reasonableness, which I like.
Well, right. Wait, go back to that first box there, Terry. There's two things in there. First of all, we're proposing that the charter state up front that the ERS is going to comply with the provisions of Act 12. That's this proper citation for Act 12 now that's been incorporated into Wisconsin statutes. The system is going to comply with the requirements of Act 12. It's important that we comply. The sales tax revenue that gets contributed into our fund is dependent on that. So we're going to comply with that in connection with the financial and actuarial audits and approve the audit fees. However, approve the audit fees is contingent of the Internal Revenue Code that they be reasonable,
okay.
Right?
Yep.
And Act 12 provides that, you know, that Act 12 itself recognizes that we're subject to the Internal Revenue Code, and it makes a point that we're not expected to do anything as a system that would violate the Internal Revenue Code, because that could disqualify our plan, which would become financially catastrophic for the city and all of its members and the Board of Trustees and everybody. So again, approval includes the concept that they have to be reasonable. As we saw today, there was nothing unreasonable about it.
Okay, good. Yep. That's it.
But I think it's important, you know, to make these distinctions so everybody understands that we're still fiduciaries. We still have a duty mm-hmm. that we owe to our members.
Good.
Thank you. And by the way, since I've mentioned the word fiduciary at least 12 times in the last 15 minutes, Patrick, we have a new trustee, so we need to have some training this year, so hopefully you'll agree to do that. And I won't get into it too much because it's not on the agenda, but you can see from this discussion that there's a need for us to, you know, thoroughly understand the requirements of our fiduciary duty.
I'd be happy to do that at the board's pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you, Jerry and Pat. Eric, anything else regarding comments or questions for the A&O committee audit charter?
So this is a delegation by the board to the A&O as a committee.
Does any board member feel strongly about? Does anyone feel strongly about holding it over for approval or further discussion or? All right, not hearing any, we'll move forward. Entertain motion to approve the 2025 A&O committee audit charter as discussed with changes.
Klossman, a motion.
Thank you, Tom. Do I have a second?
Helen, a second.
Thank you, Tim. Any objections regarding?
Not hearing any objections, the motion to approve the 2025 Annual Committee Audit Charter with changes discussed passes. Moving on to item 9, informational, letter A, for the pending litigation reports. Is there a need, Patrick, to go into closed session for this?
No, Mr. Chair, I don't have any substantive updates. If anybody has any questions, I'm happy to answer them, but no significant movement from last month.
Thank you, Patrick. Do you see any need, Jerry?
No.
For discussion on it?
No.
Any other items? All right, not hearing any need to discuss items. Item 9, informational, item A through J, can be placed on file without any objections. Not hearing any objections, I will entertain a motion to conclude this meeting. Do I have a motion to conclude?
Board moves.
Bill, second.
Thank you, Deborah. Thank you, Bill. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections, the meeting, motion to close the meeting at 11:25 a.m. passes. Thank you, everyone, for their time.
Back to mischaracterization.